to the Mobility Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Pete Gould, with Shared Mobility Strategies, and I'm joined by...
Greg Rogers from Securing America's Future Energy, or SAFE, and please forgive my cold today.
And Greg Rodriguez with Best Best in Krieger, and as always, views are our own. Yes, and please forgive Greg and I's cold next week. So we are again live from ITS America here in DC at the Convention Center, and we've got a great lineup of interviews going on, and this one is definitely one that I'm excited about. We have a good friend of the podcast, Rob Brown, who is the Director of Public Affairs for Too Simple. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, but more importantly, tell us, or equally important, tell us about Too Simple, what the company is, what you're doing, and the technology.
Yeah, happy to. So I have the role here of Head of Government Affairs and Public Affairs. So my primary responsibility with Too Simple is to make the regulatory framework for this tech to happen. But you know, more importantly, what Too Simple is, as we're a full stack provider, level four, vertical or horizontal integration with the OEMs. We're working with PACCAR and Navistar, our two OEMs that we have development agreements with.
And it's for trucking.
For trucking, exclusively heavy duty trucking. We think there's a great business use case from distribution center to distribution center business model. That's what our truck can drive. It can drive local and highway roads as long as those local routes are in the industrial parks. Luckily, our future customer has a lot of distribution centers and industrial parks near the highways. We are testing currently in Arizona, hauling commercial cargo every day, 3 to 5 routes in Arizona. And then obviously today, what we're excited to talk about, we just wrapped up our first project with the Postal Service running across 3 states.
So that's great. So, I think we're really excited to be diving in on the commercial autonomous front because we have yet to really talk about that. A lot of us are talking about passenger vehicles. So, I think a lot of people will know your company in the news from what you just talked about, the partnership with the Postal Service. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about? I think a lot of us are struggling, keep asking, what's the federal government doing? Yeah. Everybody has their eyes on NHTSA, and a Postal Service pulls a fast one.
Well, it wasn't too fast.
<He's> like, fast might not be.
It went the speed limit the whole time.
Fair enough.
It's been over a year and a half in the making. So it's something that the Postal Service, I guess, if you're not looking at the Postal Service, you might not know, but it's been in their 5-year plan, reports to Congress, testimonies. You go to their website. They put out an RFP was a couple months ago for last mile, autonomous delivery. So they've been, interested in this space for quite some time. They reached out to us, like I said, a long time ago. Granted, it took a lot of meetings. I've been out in D.C. You guys have seen me a lot of the times out in D.C. Yeah. I've been doing those meetings. They came out to Arizona. So it's been a long process. And, they're the ones that challenged us with the route. We originally pitched them a inter-Arizona route that we've already been doing. And they said, no, thank you. We want to see you guys do one of our routes. Dallas to Phoenix, round trip, going back and forth. And so I put that to our engineering team, and they were excited about it. And it's been, we just wrapped up on Friday, and it was, we think, a big success.
Mm-hmm. And if you can talk about it, it sounds like you crossed state lines. So yes. Was there any sort of exemptions that allowed you to operate autonomous across state lines?
So, people who know me, I'm very open and transparent. And so I've been working with my counterpart with ADOT, obviously, since we've started in Too Simple in Arizona, then reaching out to my friends in New Mexico through their Department of Transportation and also Texas Department of Transportation. So they were aware of this project even before it was finalized because I didn't want anyone to get blindsided. We even reached out from a legislative perspective to give them a heads up because, when you see this stuff, constituents will call. So we wanted to be
a state legislature?
State, yeah, state. So we wanted to give them
every city council. never too careful.
And so obviously they put us in touch with their law enforcement, DPS and Highway Patrol, so everyone was aware of what was going on again because we didn't want anyone to get surprised in a negative way. And then obviously since we were dealing with the federal government, obviously with FMCSA was involved and was aware. Gave them. I'm actually surprised it actually didn't leak out before because I had to tell quite a few folks. that this was a possibility, and we weren't sure everything, all the contract wasn't I's dotted, T's crossed, but again, it's kind of like how we work, and my ethos is that, being more open and transparent is more of a positive thing than a negative. So it was a lot of folks to talk to, but everyone was open and receptive, and they're interested, primarily from a safety perspective and also but an efficiency perspective as well. So it's been it was a great first project, and we're hopeful that, that it will continue in the future.
Mm-hmm. And so after this tweak pilot, first of all, are there any specific findings you can share? How many miles were driven?
Yeah, so it was 1,000 miles each way, and we're actually developing a report for the Postal Service as part of our agreement that within 30 days of the end of the pilot, we would deliver a report on how the system did, what were some key performance indicators, was there some fuel stuff, so we're working on that as we speak, and, one thing nice, because it's the Postal Service, it'll all be public record, and I think as excited as I am for Too Simple, I think this project from an industry perspective is huge for the industry, because I'm not disparaging anything, but we've had some kind of demo pilots in the past, but they're usually one-offs, and they were kind of with future customers, but this is the first major fleet that's gone public with, kind of interested in the technology. I know all of us are working with big customers, but none of us can talk about them, due to that kind of constraint. And so having the Postal Service come out in support of this type of technology, not even say just Too Simple, but the technology, is a big win from a public affairs and education, aspect. So we're hoping we can use this pilot again as the beginning of a learning process, but we're glad it happened, and I think it can grow from here.
Great. And so are there hopes to continue working with the Postal Service, I assume, and other partners? I mean, how do you start looking at future partners here?
Yes, indeed. So we'll deliver that report, and hopefully we're going to have a follow-up meeting with leadership in the Postal Service to go over that. I know, again, this isn't just a one-off for them. They're thinking long-term, future-proofing themselves, making themselves more efficient. They have to, deliver the mail to all of us, and, being able to deliver mail and parcels, through the long haul delivery is an integral part of their contracting process. But it's something that I know they'll continue looking into, and we're hopeful that they'll continue looking into with Too Simple as well.
Was that part of the agreement, though? Or was the agreement for this 2 weeks and then?
Yeah, so it was, I don't want to put words in their mouth. So, so the agreement was just this 2 week thing, mm-hmm. plus the report. But they said, like I said, I think they're open to continuing working with us.
Choose the next RFP that you must have experience with the U.S. Postal Service autonomous delivery.
Exactly.
Open to all bidders, but, you have to have been part of that. Yeah.
But that's a good point. I'm just curious, do you think that the RFP that the Postal Service put out was a good one? Is this something that maybe state DOT should look at to say, hey, is there something we can pull from there to do more pilots with your industry?
Yeah, I mean, my advice, I guess, to the government is that industry is very eager and excited to work with them. They bring some authority, both good and bad, right? But they also bring credibility. So as long as your tech is up to snuff, I think it is a great opportunity for public education. I mean, we all have, the Postal Service, regardless of what you see on a congressional hearing, has over 80. It's the highest rated federal agency in the country. It has over an 80% approval rating from the American public, which is incredible. Because we all have an emotional connection to the Postal Service, right? Whether it was your care package you got from your grandma in college, or a letter that went announcing you got married or whatever. So we all have that emotional connection to the post office, which makes it politically difficult for Congress. I get that. But it is also a nice ambassador for this type of technology because of that. They've been around before we were a country, and they want to be here, for the next 200 years. So, that's why they're interested in the tech.
That's good. And speaking of the tech, let's go back and describe to us the kind of what stack you're using. Mm-hmm. There's the kind of LiDAR camp we were talking about. the kind of AI visual based cameras and all that. Can you describe where you guys are?
So yeah, we're Sensor Fusion. So we're
sounds
sensor,
like a hot new restaurant.
Yeah, the sensor. You don't want to get us in the
sushi.
Yeah.
And
the sensor wars. No, but we are definitely camera based system. We do have LiDAR on the truck as a secondary sensor, and also we have 6 radar as well. But cameras is our secret sauce. And obviously the software that goes to support those cameras. And we can drive day and night with those cameras. We have a relationship with Sony that we announced a few months ago for our night vision. We can drive in the rain, we can drive in high winds. We haven't solved snow, full disclosure, but we're luckily on I-10. So it only snowed once this year in Tucson.
Don't tell the postal service.
I'm on. Hey, I'm open and transparent. I told them I-90 is not going to be our first ODD. Yeah. You will not see us. The Northeast will be our last. Entree into autonomy, or so, maybe Canada. I don't know.
So talk to us about the from company launch, got the tech, stacked up to we're doing a pilot with the Postal Service. Can you tell me about this, all of the testing and mm-hmm. validation, and how do you show them that this is safe? Yes. How do you show the public?
Yeah, so we've been out testing in Arizona for almost 2 years now. It has been, driver, CDL, experienced trained driver behind the wheel, hands off, but, ready to engage at all times. Riding co-pilot with them is our engineer. They are basically communicating. They work as in tandem as a team. They're saying what the system's seeing. The driver is responsible from the outwardly facing. So if our truck wants to make a left change lane because of a traffic reason, that driver's still checking mirrors to make sure that lane's clear to execute. Obviously we also have some policy takeovers. If there's ever an emergency situation or a live accident, the driver takes over immediately. So we are not, the American road and Arizona motoring public is definitely not guinea pigs at all. This is highly, safety is highly important to us, and that's why we have 2 people in the vehicle at all times working together as we're testing. So we've been testing a little over 2 years. We started actually running commercial cargo last year at end of summer, early fall, and that's been really interesting, learning how this technology will scale within the logistics industry has been very interesting. So that's one of the reasons what we've learned is, and why we're so supportive of the distribution center model, mm-hmm. is that we feel like that really scales within the industry. So we're not asking for an infrastructure build out on transfer hubs or any kind of that kind of stuff. It solves the long haul, line haul problem for the industry, we think pretty seamlessly. That's where the driver shortage is most acute, is in the long haul. For local P&D, that's not that, the shortage is not that real. So we feel we can solve a problem for the industry, it's a workable solution. We're developing a fleet of vehicles. We're trying to get to 50 trucks by the end of this year. Again, working with PACCAR and Navistar as our OEMs, and also all the tier ones that we have to interact. Obviously, our system has to interact with braking, steering, engine, throttle, transmission. So working with all the tier one providers that make up the ecosystem of the truck, and then also our commercial partners. We're up to 13 customers right now. That we're hauling cargo for in Arizona. And because we've opened Texas, that will be an open route now that we'll offer to our other customers. Because how our technology works, I forgot to mention earlier, is that we earnestly do believe in the map, and we build our HD map on the route. So you can think of it as our mapping vehicle lays down the rails, and then the truck runs autonomously along those rails over and over and over again.
And so that's a differentiation from Tesla, for instance.
Yeah, you said it.
Where theirs is purely see and react,
yeah.
And yours has the HD map on top of, and yeah. then see, recognize, yeah. react, and all of those.
Yeah, and our engineering team and safety team really believe in any computing you can do offline is a good best practice to follow. Online mapping, the level 5 Nirvana. Everyone thought 3 years ago the computational power would make another breakthrough. It hasn't. And, that's why level 5 is, kind of pins in it, right? You know, TBD. But for level four, the business use case is perfect for trucks. It's repeatable routes, long distances, you know, day and night operation, and it's really on us now to, you know, prove out the tech, go through the validation period to product level safety. Everything has to go through ASIL DCEL, you know, safety critical path, you know, whether it's your redundancies in cameras, redundancies in CPUs, redundancies in power. As you can imagine, we require quite a bit of power from the truck, and we also generate lots of data, you know, and how we manage and offload that data is an important part too.
And since we're at the ITS America conference, I'm curious, from like an infrastructure perspective, do you also see connectivity to be a part of a redundancy for safety, or are you still trying to feel that one out?
Well, the connectivity and the infrastructure, I guess I don't want to speak for everyone in our industry, but
right.
Our truck has to be able to operate safely and deploy safely on current infrastructure. And, you know, with infrastructure kind of in the news and everyone's hopeful we might get an infrastructure bill, kind of what we've been, you know, telling
about everyone.
Some folks. And
it's early in the conference.
Yeah. You know, what we kind of tell people, what's good for an autonomous truck whatever's good for an autonomous truck is also good for a human driver. So, you know, clean, you know, filling potholes, clear lane markings, you know, those are great for human drivers, and they're also great for autonomous vehicles.
That's interesting. And do you foresee perhaps in the future, again, not wanting you to get any proprietary confidential things, but, you know, I think a part of the discussion that gets easily overlooked is thinking about even if you have an autonomous vehicle operating, you're probably going to have some sort of remote operations unit, and that might have to do some sort of emergency override of the existing tech, and that's going to take some sort of spectrum in the air.
Teleoperations, there's a few companies out there that are actually doing active teleoperations. We're not a huge fan of that. We don't feel you can do it safely because of what you just brought up. But remote monitoring will be a part of our future, where the trucks, you know, to be truly level four, they're going to be able to have to get themselves the minimal risk condition. Yeah. But, you know, Chuck, our CPO, always brings up, you know, we get big monsoons in Arizona, right? And
right.
Let's say the road gets washed out and you have a highway patrol officer, you know, there just, you know, telling people to drive up the embankment or I don't know, like something, right. You know, that the truck wouldn't be able to understand. So what we are going to have to remotely access those cameras, look at the situation, and then breadcrumb it. But the truck itself would still have to execute that autonomously, so not done remotely from a remote location, but actual doing the driving task. So that's what the application where you can see for remote monitoring applications.
No, that's interesting, because you just see that language in a lot of state bills, like pull over to a reasonably safe condition.
Yeah.
And I just, of course, being a lawyer, I'm reading that and being like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
And then remote operators, just all these things I think we're taking for granted, which is great that you're investing in the research.
Yeah, so we have to. And a part of our mapping is obviously mapping all the exit ramps. So ideally, you know, if something was wrong, we'd get off at an exit ramp, you know, and there's a whole level of functional safety requirements that we, you know, first priority, second priority, you know, first priorities are the sanctity of life, and it goes down from there. But the worst case scenario is, you know, the truck stops in the middle of I-10 and causes a major, you know, traffic jam. We don't want that to happen, but, you know, that would be like,
it could get a little worse.
The other scenario.
And I mean, just maybe one more question on that line. Mm-hmm. You talked about off ramps and things like that. Obviously, there's a lot of development going on across the country.
Yes. So the truck has to interact with construction sites.
Yeah.
And thank goodness there's so much construction on I-10. We're getting lots of learning. And if you go to our, we had a NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt came on for a ride and a few other outlets, and you know, they've gotten to see us how our truck navigates those construction sites. So it's been good having the media kind of be a good neutral third party validator of the technology and of the system.
And also updating your maps for where the future off ramps might change.
Yes. And then also one thing nice about it is so even the trucks will do mapping, not online mapping,
right?
But they will, every time the truck runs, it remaps remaps the route as well. So
Now talk to us about from the feds. Whether it's from Congress, you know, there was AV Start, which did not include trucking. do you need a AV truck start?
So
we don't need anything from Congress.
We don't want a truck stop. AV, we're talking about truck start. Right? Start, right? So we are very.
You can work on the acronym. Yeah. That's what the interns are for. Okay. Yeah.
So we are very supportive of Congress if they want to act on a bill, and we strongly encourage trucks are a part of that bill. But we technically do not need a bill to regulate this space. You know, one thing beneficial of being an autonomous truck government affairs guy is that we're not asking for exemptions from a tech perspective. We're not asking to remove steering wheels or brake pedals. All of our vehicles will need to interact with human drivers for the foreseeable future. So going forward will be an extra safety added benefit, which is in FMCSA's wheelhouse. It's been in their wheelhouse for quite some time. So they feel, this isn't me saying it, you know, if you look into AV 3.0 and their new AMPRM that they just released last week, it is they're aligned with what we see the future from a regulatory perspective for heavy duty trucks. But I always like to keep Congress updated. Every time I come out to DC, I try to meet with folks on Capitol Hill just to keep them updated on, you know, where we're at in the space, and obviously, you know, keeping our delegation updated in Arizona and all that good stuff.
Can you give our listeners just a quick 1 minute recap of what the FMCSA AMPRM has in it? It's released last week.
So
say we haven't gotten around to reading it.
Yes.
I'll read it.
I mean, there's another thing we need to read first, right? Yeah. Yeah. A big report.
So it took a lot of AV 3.0 and then put it into direct questions for us to comment on. So one that hours of service, you know, was one of the questions that we were just talking about offline, is that, you know, when the system is engaged and there isn't a human behind the wheel, and let's say there's a human in the sleeper berth, should those hours count against that human's for that driver's hours? So, and how they are aligning right now is how they do it today with team driving, where a human driver is driving behind the wheel and their team driver's in the sleeper berth, and those hours aren't counting against that person's hours. So we feel as an industry, you know, we've had a few talks with industry leaders and, you know, a few of my competitors. We're very encouraged about the interpretation FMCSA is taking. We think it's a measured, it's a safe approach, you know, using industry best standards from voluntary safety self-assessments to other industry leading, you know, practices from cybersecurity. So we feel it provides a clear path, but doesn't try to regulate something too soon. You know, we are still under testing and development. You know, regardless of what the startups will say, there is no commercial deployment, you know, OEM adaptation, you know, ready for you to buy a new Peterbilt tomorrow with the autonomous package, you know. So
the hours of service is a good question.
Yes.
So talk to us about, because when people think self-driving trucks, they think elimination of jobs.
Right.
We also then are always hearing the massive driver shortage. Is the end game here an empty truck with a bunch of cargo, or is it always having one driver who's now, it's basically a augmentation of their ability and productivity?
Yeah. Not to give you a DC answer, but it'll be both. There'll be certain.
That's not possible, actually.
It will be route specific, it'll be regional, it'll be customer specific. Because one thing that we've learned, our customers that unfortunately we can't talk about, some are interested in obviously certain routes that they could remove the driver. Certain customers want to leave a human in the vehicle. Maybe they're not driving, but they're a part of there for customer service or load security. You know, where we think the bread and butter of this autonomy is going to be, where routes like we just did Arizona to Dallas, where you're beyond hours of service. That you're either having to do it from a team approach or putting it on air freight or having to stop every 11 hours and sleep. So instead of that driver having to stop, that vehicle could be driving the entire time. So you're lowering the amount of time that driver's away from home, and you're also getting some ROI on the business side as well.
So as you're moving across the states, and you know, you talked about your interactions with Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, how much consultation are you having with the actual staff of governors? I mean, we have NGA, National Governors Association, is doing a technology and transportation workshop right now. A bunch of representatives are in there. I think right now there's actually a session going on about workforce. Mm-hmm. So how much interaction are you starting to have at the state level to, you know, you talked about Congress, but at the state level to introduce, you know, this concept and what might be coming and what you should be thinking about with regard to updates to state legislation and vehicle codes.
Yes. So we work very closely with obviously the Arizona governor and through their you know, actual staff, but also from, you know, the DOT perspective.
Right.
The other states, it's been primarily just with the state DOTs and law enforcement.
Right.
The you know, for, you know, deployment and vehicle codes, we haven't really gotten that into at the state level. It's been more of a testing and, you know, open transparency, trying to develop a cogent, clear law enforcement interaction plan.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? What goes into a law enforcement?
Okay. So I'd argue that autonomous trucks have a strategic advantage over passenger cars in probably much every single regulatory framework there is, just inherently on how the business case is used. But one thing I'll give my passenger car friends is that they probably have a strategic advantage when it comes to law enforcement interaction, because they can just meet with that one, where they're testing that one city's PD, train them, you know, and they're done. Our vehicle, you know, we meet with the sheriff's office, the police departments, the highway patrol, the DPS, the border patrol, plus three state, you know, multiply that 3x.
We joked before, do you have to more or less meet with every local jurisdiction, or is the highways the jurisdiction of the highway patrol?
It is the jurisdiction of the highway patrol, but because we do local roads, and as any law enforcement, you know, they drive on the highway as well, and if they can be responding. We just went, you know, EMT and fire. So we are in the process. I am not saying that thing is baked. We are still in the process of developing a good, solid law enforcement interaction plan for these vehicles. And that was also a part of the AMPRM about, you know, how enforcement officials, way stations will interact with these vehicles long term. So it's you know, again, it's a problem we are working on, but we have yet to solve.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. When you see all the way stations, I mean, is that, you know, a new added way to investigate whether or not a truck is operated safely?
Yeah.
Is it hacked? Things like that. That requires it to go over there. So, I mean, it would be great to see your insights, how they evolve, and some of the comments you make.
Yeah.
To see what are these new ways to use existing infrastructure and existing foundations.
Yeah, CVSA, the Commercial Vehicles Safety Association.
Yeah.
They represent, I don't know, pretty much all or most of all the highway patrol and way stations. They have a task force dedicated to this very question. So we're obviously working very closely with them. We're all kind of hopeful level 8 inspections occur, and those would be beneficial for human drivers and autonomous vehicles, you know, working through FMCSA. But like you said, it is a real, you know, problem, because, you know, we have to coordinate multi-state, multi-law enforcement agencies, multi-first responders, you know, to understand and operate and be safe, you know, around these interacting with the vehicles.
So another task force we get to monitor.
So what's next? What's next for TrueCivil? What do you see in the next 12 to 24 months?
So it is scaling what we're already doing, getting to those 50 trucks, getting through the, you know, testing and getting to the verification process, which triggers a whole set of basically product level, safety level, from a software perspective, from a hardware perspective, where we can, you know, hardenization of the system to get you to the point where eventually you guys could order your Peterbilt with the autonomous package. We think, you know, in a retrofit capacity, we can get to a driverless route by 2020, 2021. But to actually get to commercial, you know, product, we need all the tier ones, you know, that we touch to give the thumbs up. We need the OEM that we're working with to give the thumbs up. So that process will take longer. So the earliest you could possibly see was like a OEM adaptation of, at least from a too simple perspective, 2023, 2024, model for heavy duty trucks.
Wow. Realism. So, that's hard to find.
Yeah.
And pardon me if I should know this, but is it also, are you still thinking electric trucks as well?
Yeah. So our software and hardware is drivetrain agnostic.
Got it.
So when the market is ready for a long haul heavy duty truck on an electric drivetrain, thumbs up. I'm stealing this from my engineers. They said there's actually even some more interesting stuff we can do from actualization of acceleration and deceleration from a controls perspective. So so as soon as, you know, the market's ready to deliver a commercial grade electrified heavy duty long haul we're on board with that. But yeah, right now it's diesel trucks.
That's all I have. This has been a fascinating conversation. We'll definitely have to have you back.
We got to get you guys on the truck. That's where it'd be fun. Do the podcast from the truck.
I mean,
that sounds great.
So we only have two seats. We'll figure it out.
We don't want to test the weigh stations or anything like that up in San Onofre.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this is great. Rob, where can we find you on various social media, etc.?
So it's our website's twosimple.com. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's twosimpleai. And then obviously on LinkedIn.
And that's
TUSIMPLEAI. And on LinkedIn is just twosimple as well.
Very nice. And I'm guessing you guys are hiring.
We are hiring, yeah, over 400 people. It's incredible the amount of growth we have, and we're going to even go even more. So it's every time I travel a lot, every time I come back to the lunch table, there's a bunch of new faces, and we just hired, I think, about 100 new interns, you know, for the summer, too. So,
and you're San Diego based, so if you're tired of the Bay Area,
yeah, San Diego based.
I have a company for you. Beautiful weather.
You can't beat it, yeah. It's hard work, but someone's got to live in San Diego, you know. So
Anyway, this has been great. Thank you guys for joining us. We're gonna have more episodes all week. Greg, do you have any closing thoughts, or where can we find you guys online?
You can find me at AVGregR.
You can find me at SmarterTranspo.
And I'm at Shared Mobility S.
And you can keep up with the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast, and catch all our episodes at mobilitypodcast.com.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, guys.